being married to a Persian guy and document it in a comical way, in a funny way, in her videos. And you might have seen them because they've gone viral a few times. And her name is Jacqueline Renee.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you're our first guest that's actually not Iranian on the podcast, but has married into the Iranian community by way of your husband, the Persian stallion himself, when it comes to the Persian culture.
Yeah.
This podcast episode will be all about your experiences of Iranian culture, Persian culture, what it felt like for you to go into it in marrying a Persian guy, the highs, the lows, the funny moments, the things that you had to come across, the idiosyncrasies. I can relate because I'm half British, half Iranian. So although I've got Iranian blood in me and I've lived in Iran for 4 years when I was younger, I can see it from both angles because my mother is half English, half Scottish, who married an Iranian guy back in the... How did you both meet, first and foremost?
We met. I was doing a hosting thing. I had just moved to LA from Minnesota. And he was like a reoccurring person at these parties that they would have. They were Persian parties. And we just kept talking. And then eventually we exchanged phone numbers. And I never anticipated myself dating him. I wasn't really looking to date anybody at the time. But I was sitting in traffic one day on the 405. And he called me right when I was sitting in traffic. And I was looking at a 4-hour traffic that day. And I happened to be right at his exit. So he's like, why don't you come over instead of sitting in traffic, ditch your friend, don't go out. And I was like, okay, fine. I don't want to sit in traffic and I really don't want to go out anyway. So we went, we hung out and we really hit it off and we had just started dating ever since then.
They say once you go Persian, there is no other version.
Once you go Persian, Iran.
Were you going around the circuit, going to parties, etc.? Or meeting him kind of open your eyes to the whole thing?
I was born in Minnesota and I was cultured, but not in regards to the Middle East. So I actually didn't even know, I wouldn't have told you where Iran was on a map. I knew nothing of the culture. And even at these parties that I would work, where I would host and serve drinks, I still really didn't know what culture I was mingling with. So he really opened my eyes up entirely to the Iranian culture.
Got you. So what was it first? Meeting the family and getting used to the Persian ways of how Persian families are, Persian mother-in-laws, or gourmet sabzi and tadik in terms of your introduction to the cuisine?
It definitely introduced me first with food. His family, he has the best family, honestly. We're all very close now. Initially, I was a single mom when I met him. I had a very young toddler at the time. So they had some reservations about me naturally, and I don't hold that against them at all. But that meeting his family definitely came later. And they did have a little bit of an issue when we decided to move in together without being married. That was a little bit of a stir up, but they quickly adopted me. And I think of his mom as my mom at this point.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's so good that they did that because even in any culture, mother-in-laws, it can be a blessing or it can be somewhat, but it depends on what you
Absolutely.
Get.
I got very lucky.
So you met this Persian guy and you're enjoying the food. When you had your first taste of Iranian cuisine, what did that taste like from a girl from Minnesota in terms of your taste buds? Because it's quite unique in some ways.
I loved it from the beginning. I didn't spend all my time in Minnesota. I actually spent a lot of time in the Dominican Republic too. So I traveled a lot. I happened to be in Minnesota before I moved to Los Angeles, but I love Persian food. I loved it from the first time I tried it. The first food I had was gourmet sabzi and paneer, the feta cheese one, help me out here.
Feta cheese one?
The sabzi and the gerdu.
Uh-huh.
And feta cheese.
I'm not a big fan of that, actually, I'll be honest. But then I'm not a fan I did a video about this. I'm not a fan of Horesh Kalaf. Every time I think Kalaf's disappointed, thinking, where's gourmet?
Yeah, where is the gourmet sabzi?
Yeah, some people love it. A lot of people, I think, understood what I was getting at when it came to korma sabzi, which is the daddy. Favorite compared to all the other cuisines that there is within Iranian cuisines? Or what's your top three?
Ash reshte. I just call it ash. I like the lentil stew. I love korma sabzi. And also my mother-in-law, she cooks like this white fish with saffron. It's unbelievable. I gain so much weight whenever they're here. I just keep eating.
Have you had bademjoon and gaymans?
I make really good kashke bademjoon.
Really good. Yeah, I've got a good friend who actually, he doesn't like bademjoon. I said, are you sure you're Iranian?
Oh!
I can't believe anyone doesn't like it.
I know.
But he doesn't like it. I think most people, when it comes to Iranian cuisine, who are not Iranian, sometimes find they're a little bit different when it comes to korma sabzi because it's quite unique. The first introduction in terms of baby steps tends to be the kebabs, chela kebab, etc. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is nice. I'm used to kebab, Turkish kebab, and other kebab. I think chela kebab is the best kebab. And I'm not even a big meat eater, but I like that.
Yeah.
I think you must have realized that food
is quite... Have you had the brain?
God, no. No. That's what put me off when I was in Iran. I used to have the smell of lamb's head. I can't eat lamb. And I remember when I was a kid, not for me. Do you like it?
No, not really. But when I first met my husband's family, they had a barbecue and they were like, here, eat this. And then they told me what it was. And it was like sheep testicles, liver, brain. I'm like, I did not consent to that.
I hear you. I don't like offal, but yeah, not for me. Not for me at all. Arsh is great, especially in winter. It's a beautiful soup. How central food is to Iranians. A bit like it is to Italians and other cultures as well. The be all and end all when it comes to Iranian families, the food takes center stage.
It's a love language.
And it's something which, even if you don't understand the language or anything like that, you can break barriers, you can converse, break the ice, because it's just a mutual language, isn't it? When someone likes something or not. You document being a foreign woman married to a Persian guy. Talk us a bit more about that and what you document and what you like to show and things that you've learned along the way.
Taking it way back, I was on my own really from 15 years old. And when I say that his parents basically adopted me into their family, they totally did. And his mom at the time when I first met him, she didn't know as much English as she knows now. But like you just said, cooking is a great gateway. So she would be, from very early on, in the kitchen showing me how to cook certain dishes. We would hang out. I would help her chop stuff. She would direct me on how to chop stuff a certain way. And their love really just helped me embrace their culture so much more and see how special it was. And it really filled a gap that I didn't have as a child. So I'm so grateful for them. And I love embracing everything about them and their whole culture.
That's the thing. Iranian culture and Mediterranean culture is warm and family orientated. So if you haven't had that so much, it's like a big bosom to go into. Because it was the same for my mum. She had a Scottish dad and an English mother. She met my dad when she was 16, 17. And it was no coincidence that her sister married a Turkish guy. And that back in 1970s in the UK wasn't the norm. Other spectrum of their backgrounds. And I think what they were looking for is warmth, passion, that kind of sense of family love. Whereas with British families, typically, especially back in the day, it was quite Victorian. They love you, but they couldn't say they love you. It was like that kind of way of thinking. And that's probably one of the reasons why they were drawn towards that. Is, in your experience, what's the best thing and what's the most challenging being married to a Persian guy and the whole Iranian thing?
The best thing for me is honestly the whole family that came with them and how supportive they are, how much they truly love us, how much they want to help us, how much we want to help them. It's really a team. And I love being on that team. That's my favorite part of this whole culture. The most difficult thing that I've came into play is that I was raised like the typical American kid for most of my life. Not a lot of supervision. I watched a lot of TV. My parents didn't know where I was half the time. And my husband had the opposite experience. So I love adopting the Persian methods with that. But we also clash a lot with raising kids because I feel like he's being too strict sometimes and he feels I'm not strict enough. So that's like our biggest probably cultural clash, but it's not huge at the end of the day.
Yeah, remember the gold standard with Iranian families, and it's a bit of a joke with Iranians at times, is if you're not a doctor, dentist, lawyer, engineer, then what the hell are you? You're a loser.
Exactly.
It's that kind of expectation of standards, especially with education. But it's changing a little. I can imagine they can be a little bit different in some ways.
I did get a little bit of a hippie in some terms. We homeschool our two youngest girls, and I'm grateful that he's on board with that.
Do you?
Yeah.
How's that?
It's great. I lost faith in our school system quite a while ago, and I saw my oldest daughter, who's now 14, go through it, and I wasn't a fan. We love homeschooling. We love them. We want to hang out with them. We want to teach them. But yeah, I love it. It's a fantastic experience.
So how does that work exactly? Do you have a curriculum, a program to follow? Do you get help from teachers coming in, or how does it work?
There's a program we follow through. There's a whole thing here that it's a program, and she gets her books and they test her at the end of each chapter. And she's actually about one or two grades ahead in each of them. So it's really easy for her to bump up a grade and be where she's at instead of sitting where she's not supposed to be, our six-year-old. So it's been really beneficial for her learning curve so that she can get ahead to where she needs to be instead of held back like she would in a typical school system.
So what about the social side? Part of schooling, friends and learning, the highs and lows.
Yeah, I would say probably every 2 weeks they have this thing where she goes all day long. She hangs out with them. She socializes. And then I also have her in like extracurricular classes, ice skating, soccer, anything like that that's in season so she can play with other kids.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I know some people are doing that at times, but I can imagine it being more work as well. So in terms of your comical angle, when you're doing these videos, some of them have gone pretty viral, haven't they?
I feel like the ones that community really likes are a banter of him pretending it's satire, where he pretends to be this chauvinistic, what people have images of what Persian guys are like. Then I'm usually like the typical, hey, give me money then, or satire for what they would think that my site would be like. People seem to find those funny the most, I would say.
I saw that video, actually. I thought that was quite funny. And what made you have this brainchild to do this? Were you always naturally creative and this just tied in with it? What was the kind of eureka moment?
I don't know. I'm unhinged in real life. I'm a total goofball, silly, a little crazy. So it's been fun. I started with it and I saw people enjoyed it. I saw they were laughing and I was like, yeah, I'll do more of this then.
So it's all based around satire and comedy, isn't it? And it's around language, it's around behaviors in terms of the two of you, how you're interacting. Anything that surprised you?
Yeah, recently I've started speaking out about it more, but the cyber army aspect from Iran and the extremists, they have been really like difficult to deal with at times. And it was a surprise to me that they would even have a cyber army that would want to cause chaos, but that's something I've been trying to hit home on more for people, especially in the West, so they can understand that sometimes that they'll read things and it's not true. That's been probably the biggest surprise I've dealt with social media in general.
See, I'm surprised about that in terms of the cyber army and the experiences you've had.
So yeah, I came out with my book, and whenever I post anything about like woman life freedom or trying to bring awareness to the situation going on with the government versus the people, I will get an array of death threats, crazy messages, things in my comments, people making weird assumptions. I've been hacked, actually. My computer got hacked at one point, the camera on it. And I had a fake profile that looked like it was probably internet minion. He repeated what I had just told my kids about bedtime and told me to turn off the lights. And he sent me that in a message. And I was like, I've been hacked. So that was really creepy. That was not a fun experience, but it did remind me I need to tighten up my security. So yeah, those have been my biggest challenges and surprises.
Yeah. See, I was unaware of the Woman Life Freedom thing and you doing that, because I was thinking, why would the cyber army bother with satire and stuff like that? I know they're miserable sods, but nevertheless, that makes sense. How the hell did they hack you though? And your camera, did you ever find out how that happened?
There were some firewalls that hadn't been updated on our router, and I had someone come in and update and secure everything. And I actually changed all of my passwords. I don't keep my passwords on any device anymore. They're all written down in a book. It got to the point too where like I had to put up cameras all on the outside of my house just for further security. And then the ones inside, just to be sure no one's hacking those, I have them turn off and turn on at certain times.
That must have been scary, right? Because that's the stuff of series that you see on Netflix, or where people kind of envisage this kind of thing. And actually hearing that from a voice when you're in your own private home, in your own room, did that kind of take it to a whole new level in terms of you and your husband thinking, hang on a minute, this is too much now?
It made me want to just do it more and expose them more, honestly. It just pissed me off where I was like, okay, if you want to play games, I'll expose you guys further, because it just really sheds light further on the type of people that we're dealing with.
Yeah, they've got about 50,000 cyber army, apparently.
There's so many, yeah.
Yeah, and they tend to do the same kind of patterns and behaviors with their comments, etc. But well done you, and kudos to you in terms of your bravery to keep doing that, especially you've embraced the culture, the community, being married, etc. But nevertheless, you've got the guts to say, well, stuff you, I'll just do it more. I'm sure that wasn't the most pleasant of surprises. On the positive note, anything that's kind of like hit your heartstrings or things that you thought, oh my God, I can't believe that, how this is all going and the responses you get and everything else.
There are. I get messages a lot in my direct messages, and the ones that fill my heart most are the ones that are like, thank you so much for bringing a smile to our faces. We come on here every day because it makes our day go better. And the ones that are grateful for spreading awareness, and the ones that need the awareness so badly, it really does warm my heart to help any way that I can. And the fact that people are grateful for that help just warms my heart even further.
Yeah, because people look for escapism, don't they? And comedy and humor, satire, it's an anesthetic. It's a pain and takes away your problems for that moment, that time. Laughter's the best medicine and all that. What's the dream?
I don't really have a dream with it. It's honestly just, it's a hobby and just something I do. I run my own company on one side, but then on another side, I do construction project management. So that's that plus kids plus farm. It's really just a hobby. I'm already in my dream. I'm very happy in life.
Yeah, because two types of people. One, the day dreams their life away. The other one who lives out their dreams. So it's good to hear that you're doing that. Would you one day love to go to Iran?
I would love to, but I don't think it would be safe. So unless there's a revolution that changes, I couldn't. I think at this point I'm on a list and I would likely be taken.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to Persian culture and Iranian culture, anything that you learned about which you were either astonished by or it took you back in terms of either the traditions or things that you got to know about the history or the culture? Talk us a little bit more about that.
So what comes to mind when you ask that is honestly my in-laws. They are the most productive older people that I've ever met in my life. And it's not just them. It's literally just Iranians in general. They are so productive, so crafty. They can take any plant they find and they'll have a medicinal purpose for it. Or they'll be out in my orchards harvesting things for 8 hours straight and be like, all right, guys, let's go do more. That amazes me. That is not American culture at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. That kind of ingenuity with stuff. When it came to your family, how did they took to your husband in terms of him being Persian? Any kind of preconceptions, all of that kind of jazz? Because he hasn't had the greatest of name in the last 45 years because of the Islamic Republic.
My family, I was raised in a family that was pretty awake on politics in general, and it never had a bias towards him because of anything. If anything, my family probably was educated on what the West has done to Iran, and we would feel bad, if anything, as opposed to having a bias towards them.
You're in America, right?
Yes.
Are you West Coast, California? Are you East?
I'm in California currently, yeah.
So the Los Angeles is Terra Angelis. I went there a few times and it was just amazing to see the amount of Iranians there. So that helps people to get accustomed to Finns, used to Finns. For example, back in the 1970s, when my parents met, it was very alien, that, in terms of Iranians. That was prior to the days of social media, everything else, back in the dinosaur time, about 150 years ago. Now, you can easily educate yourself, and especially if you live in a city where there's a strong Iranian community. I'm sure you come across Iranians, you've eaten, you've seen, you've had interactions with. So it's good to hear that. How does, you said you got a young kid previously. How has she taken to it all?
She's so adaptable. She's awesome. She's loved Gourmet Sabzi actually since she could talk. Like, she's total Gourmet Sabzi monster. And when his mom is here too, she's the first one in the kitchen, like, is there any food ready? She's taken really well to it. She's mixed. So she's half Black, and people look at her and they would have no idea that she knows some Farsi and that she knows anything about Persian culture, but she's very well adapted into it.
Yeah, there's a guy I know. He's called I Am Tehran. He's half Iranian, half Black, and he speaks perfect Farsi, much to my shame.
It's wild. It's wild to see someone that doesn't look like they would speak it so fluently. It's fun.
Yeah, it's like those videos of like an American person suddenly going to a Chinese restaurant and ordering all fluently in Chinese. Their faces. Shocked.
Yep.
You mentioned about the in-laws, the food, the sense of family, that sense of love, where you feel like a team. What about the music?
Yeah, I really like, he just passed, Farmaz Aslani. His music's my ultimate favorite. Khorush, I don't know, I might be butchering his name. I love his music too. Hediye, all the old school ones. Like, I have a Persian playlist on Spotify, and they're all from probably the 80s, but they're my favorites.
Yeah, what do you think of the Persian rap scene? The newest stuff. Not for me.
What was that song by Sammy? Was it Sammy Biggie? No. The Voy Chegar Maste Man. I definitely used to drink to that song way back in the day, but that was like the closest I got to Persian rap, I think.
When I was 17, I spent 4 years there when I was a kid. Came to the UK, couldn't speak a word of English, then went back again, much older. And the first taste of Iranian music, although people say so cheesy, was Andy. His song, Cheshmoye Naze.
Probably know it. I have a hard time with the artist remembering.
Yeah, yeah, look at it. A lot of Iranians will say, oh, so cheesy, Andy. But he was one of the kind of popular poppy ones. So he sounds like he got good taste in music anyway. And he pronounced it really well. The language, how fluent are you? Because I've seen you speak quite well at times.
Yeah, I learn, I don't know, I guess probably like an elementary proficiency would be a good way of describing it. I'm learning more every day. Sentence structure is something I've been working on lately. But yeah, I feel like I have an okay grasp on it. When my in-laws are here and that's all they speak, I definitely pick it up faster again. But my husband sometimes will only speak to me in English and then I'm like starting to lose it. So it's all about constant refreshers for me.
How difficult do you think the language is to learn?
I know Spanish because of living in the Dominican Republic, and I think Farsi easier than Spanish was.
So you speak it at a fairly decent level, for someone who's just got to grasp with it, etc. But writing and reading, you're learning.
I don't know how to read the alphabet.
Iranians, you know they love to party, right? Any excuse to have a party.
Oh my God. They out-party me every time.
Any excuse to have a party. And that's one of the sad things, because for a community that is all about love, light, joy, it's paradoxical having the reverse. But we'll see. Time will come with all of these things. So as we're coming towards the end of the podcast, how can people find out more about you, your videos, what's your best kind of contacts, etc., to reach out to see those funny satire videos when they're feeling like they need a bit of a ray of sunshine?
Just on Instagram, it's at TheRealJZ91.
Thanks ever so much, Jacqueline, for appearing on Successful Iranians.